it hasn't happened already, sometime soon you will be faced with this very common scenario. It's another night on call and your pager's going off, yet again. It's another consult from the emergency department. They have a young man with 24 hours of abdominal pain that's been intensifying. The emergency physician is wondering if it's appendicitis. As you make your way down to see the patient, what sorts of things should be going through your mind? In this podcast, we'll discuss acute appendicitis, how it presents, how to diagnose it, and the options for treatment. Welcome to Surgery 101. Appendicitis simply means inflammation of the appendix. It is quite common, occurring in 7% of the population at some point in life. Appendicitis becomes more common through childhood and peaks in incidence during the teen years. With advancing age, appendicitis becomes a less common cause for acute abdominal pain, but it has to remain in the differential diagnosis for acute abdominal pain in any age group. While it is not considered a grave diagnosis in the modern world, mortality from acute appendicitis was as high as 75% in the late 1800s. Surgical treatment and the use of antibiotics in complicated cases have reduced this rate to less than 1%. However, considerable morbidity and even death can still occur as a result of appendicitis. This usually occurs in the context of delayed diagnosis and treatment, particularly in the elderly. The pathophysiology of acute appendicitis is thought to relate to the obstruction of the appendiceal lumen with subsequent distension of the organ, bacterial overgrowth, compromise of the circulation, necrosis of the appendiceal wall, and finally, perforation. The cause of this obstruction seems to vary with age. In younger patients, lymphoid hyperplasia, perhaps secondary to viral infection, is thought to be the common cause of obstruction. In adults, blockage by solid particles of stool called fecaliths seems to be a more common etiology. However, obstruction by tumors, parasites, seeds, and other foreign bodies can also cause appendicitis. So that's what appendicitis is, but how does a patient with it present? Acute appendicitis can present in a multitude of ways. Because of the variable length of the appendix and the variable mobility of the cecum, acute appendicitis can potentially present as pain anywhere in the abdomen. However, it is helpful to know the so-called classic presentation, as there are usually elements of it in the history of any patient with acute appendicitis. Appendicitis classically begins with vague periumbilical abdominal pain. This is often, but not always, accompanied by nausea and anorexia. Over the course of 24 hours or less, the pain intensifies and becomes localized to the right lower quadrant. The explanation for this phenomenon is that the initial pain of the distended, inflamed appendix is of a visceral nature, and therefore poorly localized. The migration of the pain to the right lower quadrant coincides with the appendiceal and periappendiceal inflammation irritating the parietal peritoneum of the right lower quadrant, resulting in well-defined somatic pain. Patients may or may not complain of feeling feverish. If a patient complains of high fever and chills, sometimes also describing pain that briefly subsided before getting worse, suspect a perforated appendix. A thorough history is the cornerstone of diagnosis in acute appendicitis. The previously mentioned details should be determined. In addition, details should be sought regarding the presence or absence of urinary tract symptoms, changes in bowel habits, gynecologic history, and family history. These will help to determine the probability of other pathologies that can present as right lower quadrant pain. The differential diagnosis is extensive, but includes gastroenteritis, Meckel's diverticulitis, urinary tract infection, and Crohn's disease. In women of childbearing age who have been sexually active, the differential includes ectopic pregnancy, pelvic inflammatory disease, ruptured ovarian cyst, tubal ovarian abscess, and ovarian torsion. In older patients, diverticulitis and malignancy are also possibilities. In young children, mesenteric adenitis and intussusception should also be considered. Physical exam begins by determining the patient's vital signs. Fever may be present, however, non-perforated appendicitis often presents without a fever. The patient may be tachycardic as a result of pain or dehydration. While unusual, some patients may present hypotensive and septic shock. A careful physical exam concentrating on the abdomen should be carried out. Tenderness and guarding with palpation over the right lower quadrant is the key physical exam finding. Classically, the pain is located at a point two-thirds of the way between the umbilicus and the anterior superior iliac spine on the right. This is referred to as McBurney's point. Palpation of the left lower quadrant resulting in pain in the right lower quadrant is referred to as Rovsing's sign. This is also suspicious for appendicitis. Internal rotation of the right hip may result in pain if the appendix is in the pelvis. This is referred to as the obturator sign. Finally, pain on extension of the right hip is referred to as psoas sign. A positive psoas sign is suggestive of a retrocecal appendix. As mentioned earlier, the tip of the appendix and the cecum itself can be quite mobile. Thus, appendicitis can present with tenderness outside the right lower quadrant. In perforated appendicitis, the patient may present with diffuse abdominal tenderness, rigidity, and guarding. Women should have a pelvic exam performed, looking for discharge from the vagina or cervix, cervical motion tenderness, or adnexal tenderness. Any of these findings suggest a gynecologic pathology, although they do not rule out appendicitis. The complete blood count with differential is the most useful lab test in diagnosing acute appendicitis. Typically, the white blood cell count is slightly elevated. Sometimes, however, the total white blood cell count is normal, and only the neutrophils are elevated. A markedly elevated white blood cell count, over 20,000 for example, suggests perforated or gangrenous appendicitis, or some other etiology. In addition to the CBC, electrolytes, creatinine, urea, liver enzymes, lipase, and a urinalysis should also be ordered. Every woman of childbearing age should have her beta-HCG checked to rule out pregnancy. In many cases, the combination of history, physical exam, and lab tests can satisfactorily diagnose appendicitis. However, there are situations where imaging tests can be helpful. These include atypical presentations, older patients, particularly over age 50, and women of childbearing age. The abdominal and pelvic ultrasound is a useful modality in children and women. There is no radiation, and it gives a good picture of the pelvic organs. However, it does not always see the appendix, and availability is limited in the evening and on weekends. Computed tomography is a very sensitive and specific test for appendicitis. It has the advantage of detecting a range of pathologies and is not operator-dependent like ultrasound is. It is also more easily available outside of daytime hours. It is most useful in older patients where the differential diagnosis is more extensive and in obese patients where physical exam and ultrasound can be of limited use. The disadvantage of CT scanning is the exposure to ionizing radiation, the need for intravenous and oral contrast, and the cost. Once the diagnosis has been made, arrangements should be made for the patient to be taken to the OR for an appendectomy. Ideally, this is done within 6 hours of diagnosis. Most patients will require an IV fluid bolus of crystalloid preoperatively. The use of antibiotics depends on whether the appendix seems to have perforated or not. In the absence of high fever and white blood cell count, antibiotics should only be given in a single dose on call to the operating room. However, if there is any concern for possible perforation, or if the operation may be delayed for some time, antibiotics should be started immediately. Cefazolin and metronidazole are commonly used. There are two approaches to appendectomy, open and laparoscopic. The open approach is done through a single incision in the right lower quadrant, while the laparoscopic approach involves a number of smaller incisions. There's little evidence to support one approach over the other, and most surgeons have their preference. Both procedures involve identifying the appendix and isolating and dividing its blood supply, the appendiceal artery. The base of the appendix is then tied off close to the cecum. In laparoscopic procedures, it may be stapled across. Then the appendix is divided just above its base and delivered from the abdomen. In the event the appendix looks grossly normal, it is still standard practice to remove it. However, a search for other sources of pain, such as a Meckel's diverticulum, Crohn's disease, or gynecologic pathology, should be carried out before closing. Postoperatively, most patients recover quite quickly if there is no perforation or gangrene of the appendix. In fact, these patients don't even need antibiotics postoperatively. Patients with gangrenous or perforated appendicitis need to be kept on antibiotics for several days postoperatively. Complications to look out for include wound infections and abscess formation. Both of these are more common if the appendix was perforated. A wound infection requires that the wound be opened and packed. An abscess usually manifests as a return of the patient's fever and pain. Usually a CT scan or ultrasound is ordered that confirms the presence of the abscess. If it is large enough, the radiologist can usually place a drain in the abscess. These patients will need to be kept on antibiotics for a longer period of time. This concludes our discussion of acute appendicitis. Despite the myriad of details and subtleties involved, there are a few key points that everyone should remember. Number one, appendicitis is a common disease and should be considered in the differential diagnosis of any patient with acute abdominal pain. Number two, the classic history is of vague periumbilical pain becoming localized to the right lower quadrant. Number three, a low-grade fever and tenderness to palpation over McBurney's point is typical of appendicitis. Number four, essential lab tests include the complete blood count, a urinalysis, and a pregnancy test in women. Number five, diagnostic imaging by ultrasound is advisable in women of childbearing age, and a CT may be warranted in patients over age 50 and in atypical presentations. Number six, treatment of the disease requires appendectomy.